case, Mr. Richard Gard. We have basically two issues, two real issues, divided into three different points. And the first one I'd like to address is simply our constitutional rights against unreasonable search and seizure. And this court is being asked to review what happened to Mr. Gard and the evidence that was presented before the motion to suppress. And even, you know, the state wants to expand beyond what they said at the motion to suppress, but I submit to the court that this court is limited to looking at what was in the motion to suppress. And the judge, trial judge, had said that he didn't hear anything about a search warrant, and he wasn't going to consider a search warrant. The state said, we're not going into that. We just want to talk about this. But the issue comes down to, is it reasonable if we're driving down the road and a police officer allegedly sees us make a turn without a proper signal, that they may turn on their lights, run us down. When we stop and wait for them to come up, that they can grab us, rip us out of the car, throw us on the ground, and put handcuffs on us. I submit to the court that under Gantt v. State, you can't even search pursuant to an arrest for a warrant, a traffic violation. And that was one of the big issues. But the excessiveness of the actions of the police in effecting this, quote, Class C misdemeanor arrest clearly makes the search and seizure, in this case, unreasonable. The offense, as again, was alleged to be a simple traffic violation. Even if this court were to somehow avoid the law, just say, okay, all the law that says you have to look only at the motion to suppress, and you consider the search warrant. The search warrant does not give, as Officer Ho admits, a right to arrest Mr. Gard. The arrest had to be simply for a traffic violation. Throwing somebody on the ground is just so excessive. It violates due process as well as the Fourth Amendment and Article 1, Section 9 of the Texas Constitution.
But was that issue tried during the hearing on the motion to suppress?
It was, Your Honor. We talked about the fact that Ho ripped him out, threw him on the ground. The fact that, and the tape shows it too, and that was an issue. In fact, the tape shows a lot of things that perhaps the court would want to look at, because it shows that Mr. Gard was not doing anything provocative. In fact, when he stopped, he put his hands up. Rather, you know, he's.
Did you order stopped. The video to be filed up here from the clerk's office?
We asked that it was. I believe I asked the clerk. The court reporter, if that was being included.
Okay.
And she had indicated that it was. So, but I will check again with her just to make sure. And if not, I'll ask that it come up. But if you look at the tape, you know, even Officer Ho's testimony that, well, they threw Mr. Gard, and that goes to the second issue on the sufficiency of the evidence to sustain a 4-200 possession case. They take Mr. Gard out. They throw him on the ground. Officer Ho says they found the drugs after they picked Mr. Gard up and took him to the jail where he was laying, which is not true. Officer Ho didn't find it. If you'll look at the tape, after they took Mr. Gard out, threw him on the ground, arrested him for failure to signal a lane change. By the way, I am definitely signaling all lane changes from now on.
That includes coming out of the parking lot.
Oh, you better believe it, Your Honor. If my car is moving out in any direction, it's going to be with a signal. But when they pick up Mr. Gard and they take him over and arrest him for this illegal lane change, the other officer's just kind of wandering around, and he looks on the ground and he sees something, and it's quite a space from where Mr. Gard was laying with two officers on top of him for failure to signal. And they go over and they pick up something off the ground, which, as Officer Hole says, he never saw it in his possession, never saw it in his pockets, never saw it in his hands. In fact, his hands are pretty well up. We don't know where those controlled substances came from. And I submit to the court that the evidence is insufficient to connect Mr. Gard to the three packets they found on the ground. The other problem the state has, of course, is they found a small, under their version, a very small amount in a package when they did, in fact, search the car. I submit illegally, but if you take it that the search warrant that was never introduced into evidence at that time was somehow gave them the right to look in the car, but not to arrest Mr. Gard, then they found a small packet, which I submit would have been less than a gram, from the description by Officer Hole and others. But the problem was that the chemist, as I think there's a real problem there, they just take everything, pour it into one bag. So you don't know how much was actually in each and every bag. So I submit to the court there is no evidence to prove a possession over 4 grams. There was 5 point something grams with everything together. And everybody admits that the three on the ground were a lot more than in the bag in the car. So
I
don't
see. Let me clarify one thing, if I may. From the briefing, it sounded like at least one person, one officer, I would have presumed, testified that the drugs outside of the car were underneath his body when they first got him to stand up. Did one person testify to that?
They did. I believe it was Officer Holt. But even if you, still, there's nothing that puts it in his possession. Officer Holt admitted that. But the tape belies that fact. And because it shows who found those controlled substances and picked them up, and it wasn't where Mr. Richard Gard was laying in the ground. So I submit to the court, again, that was, first of all, a product of an illegal search and seizure. But even if it wasn't, and somehow this court found that it is proper to manhandle and throw somebody to the ground because they didn't signal a lane change, I certainly hope that's not the law in Texas. I mean, you know, we used to hang people, you know, for the most minor of offenses, but that was vigilante justice. I mean, as long as we have, you know, a constitution that says we can't do that, and we've protected our rights. I mean, 3823 has been the law in Texas since Reconstruction. Actually, just after Reconstruction, they passed the statute that says you can't use anything in evidence in Texas if it came as a result of an illegal, if a violation of any law of the state or constitutional provision or even of municipality. If you violate if the police violate the law or another individual violates the law and violates your rights thereby, you can't use that into evidence.
Mr. Byrne.
Yes, sir.
Did Mr. Gard testify at the hearing on the motion to suppress?
He did not.
So what evidence is there that contradicts the claim on the part of the police officer that he was ignoring instructions to get out of his vehicle?
The tape. You see him stop. You see him put his hands up. You can listen to that tape all you want. They say they've got their guns out, for one thing. So what are you going to do? You going to put your hands down and get shot?
My concern is that your contention is that the police officer acted to police officer and that he was ignoring instructions to get out of the vehicle. There's the question to me of who's right about that, and if that motion is present, client's not testified, and you are totally unpaid, then what we into could pay.
Yes, you certainly should. And there's, you don't hear anything, get out of the vehicle, get out of the vehicle, you know, until they grab him and throw him to the ground. But again, even if that, why do they have guns out and threatening somebody, ordering them out of the vehicle for a failure to signal lane change? I mean, it's a little excessive. And that's the whole issue. You know, it's our rights that are being violated here as well as Mr. Guard's. Clearly, if the police can do that to him, they can do it to anyone else. And I submit to the court that this court shouldn't set a precedent that it's okay for police officers to manhandle people and throw them on the ground because they didn't signal their lane change. There's going to be a lot of soccer moms and dads who are taking their kids to sporting events who are getting thrown out of cars and thrown on the ground. It's so straightforward. It's just so excessive. I mean, look at the tape, look at the issues. There's no way this court could find that this actions of these police officers was reasonable and prudent and constitutional for violent, for arresting somebody, stopping, and basically a traffic ticket offense of failure to signal. And again, like I say, even if you somehow got to the search warrant, which you shouldn't, but if you did, that search warrant, again, does not authorize, as Officer Hull admits in the trial of the case, them to arrest Mr. Guard. Unless there are further questions, I'll give whatever time I have back.
Well, I was just going to ask about the effect of the warrant, that it seems like it would independently authorize search of the vehicle. Apart from the arrest, instead of just the search incident to an arrest.
Had the warrant been admitted in the motion to suppress, then they may have an argument. They did not admit that. They said, we are not relying on the search warrant. The judge said he's not going to consider any references to the search warrant because we kept objecting that there wasn't one. And, you know, until they produced it in the court, it's sort of it's the Knox v. State objection, Your Honor, you know, to traffic warrants. If you don't produce it, it doesn't exist. And we were making that objection until the judge says, no, I'm not considering that. Just go on, because I haven't heard anything about a search warrant. And then he makes findings of fact about a search warrant that he's never seen unless he was ex parte by the state after the hearing, because it was never admitted into evidence.
But so, a copy of it was attached to the motion to suppress.
According to the state. Yes, Your Honor, it is, but it was never admitted into evidence.
Okay.
So it was not a part of the record before the court in the motion to suppress. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne. Mr. Gibson for the state.
May it please the court. The one thing we agree on is that this court should look at the video for a couple of reasons. But let me back up a little bit and mention briefly preservation on this excessive force question. Mr. Burns is right that it was talked about. He cross-examined Investigator Ho about this sort of dynamically assisted vehicle exit that the police conducted. But it wasn't actually litigated. And any judge, I suppose, sitting there watching this cross-examination would think that, oh, well, Mr. Burns is scoring some nice points on perhaps credibility, because the judge could watch the video too. And if Investigator Hill was trying to downplay what happened, well, the video is there to sort of gainsay that, I suppose. But at any rate, it wasn't part of the motion to suppress, and it wasn't part of the actual hearing, at least as far as trying to suppress the evidence that might have flowed from putting the defendant on the ground.
But if he's being cross-examined by it and the state doesn't object, isn't it the issue really being tried by consent?
If it was clear that that was the issue, I mean, maybe the it could be said that the issue of whether that actually happened is now at issue, but I think there's a separate one, which is in the curious context of a Fourth Amendment hearing, is we are asking this court to suppress evidence that flowed from what we think was an unconstitutionally excessive use of force by the police. And since that was never articulated, I don't think anybody was on notice that that was something that was going to be considered. So that's why we regard that as unpreserved. But as far as the merits of that go, I think the video is pretty clear evidence that this wasn't, you know, this was exactly the reasonable amount of force under the circumstances. It seems just right. It's not too little. It's not too much. The video shows that they ordered him out of the car, and he paused. It wasn't an incredibly long pause, but it was long enough for the officers to be worried about it. And Mr. Burns keeps discussing this as if it's three traffic violations, and of course it is, which gave the officers the right to pull over Mr. Gard. But more importantly, it's not floating out there devoid of the context that this was a drug investigation, that there was a warrant for the house and this truck specifically, that the officers were investigating him for this. They were concerned about the fact that he didn't jump out of the car. It's possible that he was, I believe there was some evidence in the record about him fumbling around inside the car. I don't remember exactly what was said about that, but it was reasonable under the circumstances to think that he could be armed, he could be dangerous, something's going on, and we're just going to take him out of the car. And again, it's not as if they slammed his head on the pavement. And a look at the video would clear up any sort of misconception on that accord. At any rate, since we're talking about the video, I think my sort of hazy memory of what this video shows now, because this was discussed when Mr. Burns was arguing, was that Investigator Ho did actually turn him over and then picked him up and took him away. Investigator Ho testified, and his testimony is consistent with this, that when he rolled him over, he saw these baggies. And it may be true, as Mr. Burns said, that another officer came and picked them up. But that doesn't mean that Investigator Ho never saw them. He was busy sort of apprehending the defendant at the time. So that's not what I would call contradictory at all. But now that we're talking about that, so I'll concede that he was under arrest for the traffic violation when they pulled him out of the car. And again, under the circumstances, they pulled him out of the car because they were worried about his delay in getting out of the car, whether he had a weapon or not. Then he's on the ground. Investigator Ho turns him over, sees the drugs. Now, this becomes a drug arrest, essentially. Certainly from an objective point of view, they could have arrested him for that. And that's why we argue that that appellant's reliance on Arizona versus Gant is misplaced. Now, like the defendant, Gant was, and let's talk about Gant for a minute. Gant was the target of a drug investigation, but he was arrested on an outstanding warrant, I think, for driving with a suspended license. So after this is Gant we're talking about now, after he's secured in the back of the squad car, they search the car incident to his arrest, which, of course, was the law at the time. And the Supreme Court said in this case, well, that's not going to do. The only way we're going to allow a search like that is if he's within reaching distance of the passenger compartment of the car, officer safety reasons. However, the court also made it clear that a search of the car would be allowed where there was reason to believe that evidence relevant to the crime that he was arrested for would be found in the car. And that's what we're arguing has happened here. As soon as he was rolled over and he had this methamphetamine under him, he was arrestable on that basis. And so, therefore, his truck could also be searched for further evidence of drug possession. And it's just like this court's opinion in Hill versus State that we cite in our brief. Hill was also detained for traffic violations, and then in plain view, officers saw what was obviously drugs in his car. So he was arrested for drug offenses, and then of course he was taken away, a la Gant, away from the car. So they weren't searching the car for officer safety, they were searching it because they reasonably believed that there would be additional drug evidence that would be found there. And it doesn't matter that they saw drugs in the car first, it's just that Hill was arrested on that basis. In our case, Mr. Gard could have been arrested on that basis, so it was perfectly reasonable under the Fourth Amendment to look in his car for further evidence of drug possession. About the warrant, I'm going to disagree slightly that certainly the state had no intention of putting this warrant into evidence, but I can't remember from the record where the judge said he wasn't going to consider it, and if I'm mistaken, then Mr. Burns can point it out, but I'm looking at when the officer first mentions that the warrant was for the specific car, Mr. Burns objects, saying, Your Honor, we contest that there is a valid search warrant or arrest warrant in this case, Your Honor, until it is produced in court. And then the judge answers by saying, okay, I didn't hear anything about a warrant, so, and then that was about it. So it wasn't really clear what the judge was saying at that point. But then the warrant was discussed in detail, as Justice Garden pointed out, it was attached to the motion to suppress. It's not as if anybody could deny the existence of the warrant, and the warrant actually lists the specific vehicle. So that is an alternative ground to find that the judge couldn't have abused his discretion in overruling the motion to suppress. Yes? Well, first of all, that would by and large be a matter for the trial court if they reasonably found that. But again, that goes, and I, not to beat a dead horse, but that goes back to our preservation ground, because that was never, the judge never really had an opportunity to even weigh that, to consider if that was something that was important as far as the excessive force claim is concerned, because as a claim, it just simply didn't exist at the hearing. So. If it had been preserved, then I think that would be the amount of time would be something that absolutely that the fact finder, in this case,
well,
the trial
look
judge,
at the sequence of events testified to by Officer Poe, sitting in the house waiting for a return. Vendat did not come back, but instead drove by.
Right. Yes, Your Honor.
And then there's a stop. And at this point, when he is stopped at this vehicle for traffic violation, the usual event would be for the officer to go to the window of the car and talk to the person still sitting in the car and examine his driver's license and maybe his insurance or whatever. But here, they were in the process of executing the warrant, and therefore they didn't just approach the car. Instead, they go to the car and say, get out of the car.
Yes.
So isn't that a difference in the sense of the analysis we would make in a gang, in a normal gang.
Oh, with regard to...
That the activities of the police were different than simply stopping for a traffic offense.
In a Gantt analysis?
Yes.
Well, I suppose that, and maybe I'm not exactly sure what you're getting at, Your Honor, but if...
Well, what I'm getting at is if he sat in the car and they never had any reason to search him inside the car under a traffic offense because he was not given proper turning, then he wouldn't have been on the ground and had the drugs fall out of his clothing to convert the suspicion and investigation from a traffic offense to a drug offense.
Yes, but the traffic offenses were arrestable offenses. So even if they politely went up to the car and said, please step out of the car, we're going to put you under arrest for, which again is not the usual thing, but they're absolutely empowered to arrest him for the traffic offenses that he committed, then he certainly would have been searchable incident to arrest, and the drugs would have been found anyway. So I suppose my short answer to that would be that it really wouldn't matter if they had placed him under arrest for the traffic violation, which under these circumstances, I'm sure they would have if we didn't just have the circumstance which occurred where he's on the ground and the drugs, and obviously he's trying to get the drugs out of his pockets or whatever, and they end up under him. So I guess that's my view of that, is that I suppose it doesn't matter because they could have searched him anyway and they probably would have found the drugs that way. But that's not really a question that we have to answer because of how he reacted. And again, I want to emphasize how the trial judge who was there, who could watch this video and who could listen to the testimony of the officers, could decide that how they conducted themselves in the sort of inception of the stop was reasonable under the circumstances. Thank you. And I just want to say a few words about, we certainly do believe that the question isn't, can this court believe that the drugs magically appeared? This is with regard to the sufficiency argument, that the drugs magically appeared under him. The question is instead, could a rational trier of fact determine beyond a reasonable doubt that he possessed the methamphetamine and that when they rolled him over, those were his drugs? And we think that was eminently reasonable. And unless there are any further questions, we pray that the judgment of the trial court be affirmed.
I have one other question.
Yes,
what about the combination of the quantities of drugs from the vehicle with those allegedly found on the ground? Is that a problem?
I don't think it's a problem. If I recall, when I was reading the record, it seemed that it all added up to me.
So they were measured and weighed separately, and then they were combined for testing. Is that?
If memory serves, I think that's how it happened. But okay. Yes, there was a smaller quantity that was found in the truck. Usually, it would be the other way around. And when those were placed together, they came out to about 5 grams, if I remember right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Burns, rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, if I may, got three issues real quick. The motion to suppress in this case does complain about the search being conducted in a manner that was violative of both the Texas and federal constitutions and the Code of Criminal Procedure. The other thing I want the court to consider is, as the state said, he didn't immediately jump out of the vehicle. You have armed officers pointing guns at you. If you, just think about it. I mean, rationally, if you jump out of a motor vehicle, as soon as they say jump out, get out of the vehicle, what's going to happen? You're going to get shot because they're going to think you're coming at them. That would be an irrational response. And because of the shortness of the their demand that he gets out, and they're on him and pulling him out and throwing him on the ground, It's just unreasonable. The other thing is they talk about Officer Holes saying, well, he saw these drugs underneath him. Just think about it. Rationally, you know, just a police officer who is a narcotics officer, he's not really a traffic officer, but he's a narcotics officer, he sees what, you know, baggies on the ground, he's going to roll somebody up, pick them up, walk them over to the car with several officers. I mean, there are five or six officers walking around there, and he's not going to say to anybody, hey, there's some drugs on the ground over there, somebody pick those up before they blow off in the wind or something. It's just incredible to believe that that would happen. And he doesn't say anything. The other officer just comes over and kind of ambling around and finds something on the ground. I submit to the court that, you know, the evidence in this case is both insufficient, and the search clearly was excessive and unreasonable, especially for a traffic violation. As the state contends, I mean, admits, this is only a traffic violation. And the court looked at that. Now, I will check with the, as soon as I leave here, to make sure that it got shipped up with the record. If not, I'll file a motion to supplement the record with the court's permission.
You don't need a motion. I've already prepared an order that will order it up if it has not yet been received.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And unless there are further questions, I ask that you take it under consideration, reverse and dismiss, or reverse and order the suppression. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Burns. Thank you, Mr. Gibson. We appreciate your arguments today, and we appreciate also your very diligent and good briefing to help us in this matter. Your case is submitted, and you all are excused. Before we recess, Ms. Graham, we were going to check on case number 3 or 4. Have you heard if they are waiving or... All right, well, we are a recess then until 10:30. Thank you.
Everyone, please rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit is now in session.